At first, I want to talk about Terrific Pacific.
Oh, well, good.
Okay.
We're favorite of Terrific Pacific.
Before we read.
Okay. I can put us on. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so when he decided to donate his materials, he gave some feelers to U of O, but U of O would have buried it, not done anything. And, you know, just been more stuff for them. Whereas at Pacific, we were just excited as all get out.
Oh, sure.
So we were his university in his district, and then he served on our board of trustees for years. And in fact, one of the only parts of his archive that is restricted, because he gave it with no holds barred. Unlike Bob Packwood or Mark Hatfield, you can look at all Vic's stuff right now. But the only part that's restricted is Vic was on, as the Board of Trustees, was the head of a search committee that found one of our presidents.
Oh.
And so that's...
That's it.
That's restricted.
Okay.
And for my book, I don't care.
So.
But yeah, that's how we ended up out there. So, how did you meet Vic?
Through a high school pal of his, Dr. Bob Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Fisher was student body president at Washington,
mm-hmm.
and was a track star. Vic was a football player.
Yeah.
And they were close friends. And yeah. Bob Fisher became a partner of my uncle, Dr. Lester Jones,
uh-huh.
in Pacific.
Uh-huh.
And he introduced me to his pal, Dr. Fisher introduced me to his pal, Vic Gattia,
mm-hmm.
and we were, Bob said to me, you should get in politics,
mm-hmm.
And do something, and because we were kind of, he was one of the originators of the Trumpeters.
Yeah.
And Bob got me into Trumpeters. I was in the, mm-hmm. the second line. I think I'm the oldest living one.
Yeah.
I think, the Trumpeters. Anyway, so then Bob said, and you got to do more. Trumpeters got to do more. And we're going to run everybody for office, but you got to get some experience, so you should get on the local political scene in Washington County.
Right.
And, and we both lived in Washington County, so that's how I met Vic.
So this is going into that 1962 election, or is it before that?
It was before that.
Okay.
That was Vic was first elected in 59, I think,
mm-hmm. and then
he served again in 61. So this is the third trip for Vic,
right?
And that is between the 61 and 63. Sessions that I met Vic.
Okay.
And then we were giving, I had quite a few opponents in the primary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave talks all over the place, and Vic would, he didn't have to give as many talks as I did.
Right.
He was a shoo-in in the primary. And, anyway, he helped as an advisor. To me,
okay,
for the primary, and I won that, fortunately.
Yeah, when I was going through and looking at all of Vic's elections, that one stands out because Leon Davis is no longer there, and everybody wants to be on that seat.
Yes, well, Leon Davis was a close friend of my family, and so he was supporting me, which was very nice.
That's wonderful.
That really.
Yeah.
And then we put up a sign. I don't know how this is close, but it was retain responsible Republican leadership. So we got to retain in there. It was not for Leon, but it's for me. Anyway, it worked. And then we had the general election,
mm-hmm.
and we're running against the head of the longshoremen group and others. And so and John Mosser, I did not know, except mm-hmm. that he was a brilliant lawyer
mm-hmm.
and highly respected and genius.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us got together and decided to run on a triple ticket.
Yeah.
And we pooled our treasury,
uh-huh.
And so we used the same money. We had the same bumper stickers, same as you have in your archives, the three pictures of our, and then we had the luxury of the Salk vaccine lines, so we could do thousands of handouts without going door to door.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's a different twist. And see, Packwood, on the other hand, he enlisted a bunch of trumpeters to go door to door. And my Dr. Lester Jones' son, Dr. Richard Jones, who became head of OHSU, he was this timid doctor handing out Packwood's things door to door. And he is told to do three things. I am representing Bob Packwood. Bob Packwood is running for office. Vote for Bob Packwood. So he knocked on the door, and this woman came to the door stark naked. And he was so shocked. He said, I didn't know what to say. I'm a doctor. I'm used to this. Or what? So he went through to Bob Packwood. Bob Packwood's running for office. Vote for Bob Packwood. I tailed out of there. Well, anyway, we didn't have to do that. And so the joke is that Vic Atiyah and John Mosher ran on my coattails. And, of course, it was exactly the opposite. So we won with not any significant opposition. Then we decided, well, that worked out well. We were compatible. So we rented apartments, joining apartments at Chuck's Steakhouse in Salem. And so we were roommates virtually. With Tia, Mosher, and Jones. Mosher was a highly disciplined guy. He would meet with Al Corbett, and then they'd go over the ways and means thing. And Mosher had a total recall of things. And he'd smoke one cigarette, he'd have one martini, and that was it. And then he would be up. He slept about 3 or 4 hours a night. He'd work, study, and then he'd get up the crack of dawn. He'd be gone. Vic was on a zillion committees and a senior in the House. Of course, he went on to the Senate. But he was there. But I was busy as a freshman trying to learn things. So I introduced a lot of stuff that dealt with Washington County, school districts, et cetera, and irrigation districts, rather. And then I had some other bills, and you asked for an overview of how the legislature worked. Well, I ran into a reality check in a hurry. I got about seven bills through the legislature. There are some bad bills that even a conservative Vic sponsored. We had a, then if you were killed by a drunk driver and you had a family of six and you had a $150,000 a year job, which would be incredible at that time, if somebody hits you in your lane, the maximum you could recover was $10,000, wrongful death. May have been 15, but I think it was that. Jack Faust, you mentioned, you interviewed, his boss was Bob Motz, and Motz was lobbying for the insurance industry for old Pete Brooks, the lobbyist, and so his partner, John Schwab, he said to him, Bob, you better drive careful when you go down there to uphold the existing limit. Another one was contributory negligence. If you were 1% negligent in something, you got nothing. And then that was changed to comparative negligence, which has been ever 50 years later. And another one was the workers' comp bill, the three-way bill. At that time, the state had a monopoly, and they were tied to jury trials. And Vic was a strong supporter of the three-way bill. Vic also was very interested in the inventory tax.
Yeah.
Because he was getting taxed over and over for the rugs in his business. And
that's really Roger Martin off, too.
So, anyway, I finally got
seven
bills passed through the House. I was on Judiciary,
which
I liked a lot.
Yeah.
Packwood wasn't. He was on the a political committee of some sort. But anyway, we teased him about being a lawyer and not being with us. But so I got them through the House, and Tom Mahoney came over to me, Senator Tom Mahoney. Mm-hmm. Remember, you know about him?
I know the name, but I don't know.
Anyway, I don't want to libel him, but he was not respected, being a very mild way of putting it. Anyway, he came up and said, Jones, he said, I want you to vote for this bill supporting some crony is. I said, Senator, I can't do that. He said, you better check around, because if you don't vote for this bill, none of your bills will see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
He was true to his word.
Mm-hmm.
He put them in his pocket. They never came up in the Senate, and that was it.
Yeah.
I just outraged. Every time I had a chance to say something negative about that guy, I did. Anyway, that was a rude introduction to the legislature, but it was fascinating to sit. I sat on the Constitutional Revision Commission, sat in Judiciary, sat on Labor and Industries. I had the labor endorsement, and that was a kiss of death to get elected in Washington County. And one of my partners thought he was doing me a favor when he got the labor people to endorse me. So I had to go around and say, I don't want an endorsement. But you can't say that either. But anyway, so the labor lobbyists, Rosie and Brown stuff, were labor industries, were handing me notes to tell me how to vote. And I told them where they could put their votes, their notes, and voted my own conscience. And Vic was very proud of me of that, for standing up to him. And we, I think then the legislative session ended, but we were going to go into a special session. I had to go on Navy duty, so I left just before the adjournment of the regular session and went on Navy duty. In the meantime, Hatfield asked if I was interested in a judgeship in Washington County. And I said, no, I don't want to sit out there. I worked in Multnomah County. And so he offered me one in Multnomah County, and I took it. So I went on the bench then. He nominated me before the I didn't serve in the special session.
And
so that was my very most unproductive career in the history of the Oregon legislature.
But,
I introduced no bills in the past.
Question about you working here in Multnomah County and living in Washington County.
You had to live within 10 miles of the border.
Okay, in order to do that.
It was.
So were you also West Hills kind of area, like Vic was?
The same thing for a judgeship.
Yeah.
You could live in Washington County, but if you lived within 10 miles. Well, wait, now, with the legislature, it didn't make any difference where I worked. It's where I lived.
Where you live,
But for the judgeship, you I could live in Washington County as long as you were within 10 miles of the border. And a predecessor lived on at Lake Oswego on the lake, and he got, Bill Dixon, he got the bill passed.
Gave
us the exemption. So that worked out great.
At that time, I mean, I've been looking at this a lot right now. The part I'm writing right now is looking at the 1950s and Vic's motivations for getting into politics. And so there's a lot going on. There's the there's corruption in Portland politics. Vic says, I want to get into politics to clean this up. There's his own personal in the rug business. He didn't choose to be there, whereas his brothers did. And so there's always a sense that Vic was not happy or was looking for other things. that kind of thing. So there's all sorts of motivations.
Yeah.
But one of them that's fascinating is Portland in Multnomah County was a city. There were 500,000 people in the county. The city was almost 400,000 people. Multnomah, or Washington County, the biggest city, had 8,000 people in it.
Right.
And it was farmers.
Hillsboro.
Yeah, Hillsboro, Beaverton, yeah. You know, just little, and, you know, Forest Grove was almost as big as they were.
Yeah.
So was there a sense that you were kind of going to the farms when you went over there, or did you feel you were living in the suburbs?
I felt I was living in the suburbs.
Uh-huh.
But it was definitely a farm county, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to be in Multnomah County as a judge, where there's more action other than farm issues and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that Vic eventually gets onto is he's on the dairy committee.
Yeah.
And spends a lot of time with that.
Right. So. Well, anyway, to watch Vic in the legislature was a joy. He just sat in a row in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And his demeanor, he was just a cool guy. I've never seen him raise his voice. I've seen him get mad,
mm-hmm.
but always controlled.
Mm-hmm.
He was a statesman. That's all you can see. You've heard all these adjectives. They won't help any. He did, centering about our relationship, we lived in the same community. I lived in West Slope, and uh-huh. he lived right next door in Broadmoor, and so we were within 2 miles of each other, and mm-hmm. our wives knew each other and mm-hmm. knew the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I married the daughter,
mm-hmm.
So we were friends, neighbor friends, and I worked Boy Scouts, and mm-hmm. he worked the Boy Scouts, mm-hmm. and so it was a good relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
With the family, I think the wives were close.
Uh-huh.
In fact, Pearl was very graciously introduced to the women's environment
uh-huh.
and socially
uh-huh.
Through Vic's wife.
Uh huh.
It was a lovely lady. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. A lovely lady and some very interesting characteristics that become important.
Yeah.
If you crossed her, that wasn't a good thing.
Not a good thing.
And also, she was an artist, and Vic was an artist too. And so when Vic is running for governor, both of them play a very interesting role with campaign things. That's the wrong color.
Yeah.
So it's just it's fascinating.
Pretty good. Well, Vic, later on, when I was on the state court, seemed forever,
mm-hmm.
I came in as a bridesmaid 3 times for the federal appointment.
Uh-huh.
And it's not good to come in second. It's just Jordan Spieth just found out yesterday.
Yeah.
Anyway, on the British Open.
Yeah.
I was very restless on the state court after mm-hmm. 19 years, I'd done everything over there I could do, and I was hoping to get an appointment to the Supreme Court. I turned down the Court of Appeals from 3 different governors. I
uh-huh.
didn't want to be in the. That was you don't have the last word. It's not presidential. And I thought, if I'm going to be appellate judge, I want to be on the Supreme Court mm-hmm. and not a Court of Appeals. So first thing that happened was Jake Tanzer, who'd been on the Court of Appeals, a mm-hmm. very gifted writer,
mm-hmm.
was appointed. And Ed Peterson, who was the best appellate lawyer,
mm-hmm.
went on the court. Then Vic's really closest friend in the legislature, Wally Carson, mm-hmm. went on, and finally me,
mm-hmm.
and that was a thing between Dick Unis and me, and Dick had a lot of the background of Vic's parents and Dick's parents and came from the back same type of background. And Dick said, no, Bobby, it's your turn. So he waited, and then they appointed Dick next. And then Mick Gillette was always a great appellate lawyer, and he did a wonderful job on the court. So Betty Roberts was appointed in the interim, but she had announced she was going to run for an open spot, and it just was not something that the rest of was put it wanted to wait for an appointment. So my time on the Supreme Court, I got time to spend more time visiting with Vic. He's awfully busy, and he did. You know, I don't have to be a, create a redundant superfluity of the fantastic job he did in the legislature and as a governor, unparalleled. But he still did add one more favor up his sleeve. I was back with Bush Sr., and I was getting hammered by one opinion I had written on the Supreme Court. Well, two opinions. One was allowing Native American Indians to use peyote, and I said they could. Scalia and company said they couldn't, and I have a side story on that. I was nominated, as asked to give the speech to the Supreme Court at the Supreme Court dinner, welcoming the new federal judges. So I thought, oh, I'm not going to give a canned speech. So I went around the table. I went over to Scalia. I said, I had a pretty good reputation in Oregon until you came along, reversed me on a peyote religious freedom case. He said, only because you're dead wrong. I said, no, because you moved the goalpost. And he said, yeah, I guess we did. Well, as a matter of fact, he did, and now they've gone back to the prior test. Anyway, that was kind of fun. But I was still hung up on another case, State v. Henry, but involving obscenity and stuff. And so I needed help. And Vic, I didn't ask Vic. He just called me when he came back. He said, I heard, I know you're hung up there, and we all want you to get on the court. He said, so I went in and talked to Bush, and I was there, and he said, he announced what who he was, and he wanted to talk to Bush, and they said, well, Colin Powell's waiting, and the president said, he'll wait. So Bush went in, Vic went in and touted me to the president, which worked out great. Anyway, that he's one other personal thing. He, my dad had a was born in Hay Springs, Nebraska, where I think there are more Indians than there were people in a sod hut, and as a, he had a baby rattle. No, he had a baby. He had a baby rattle, which I still have, but he had a baby Indian moccasins that they put on my dad. Now, I gave them to Vic, and he was so touched. He wrote me a note about that. I think you may have.
Yeah, I'm sure we do.
Anyway, he was a very sweet, sensitive guy. And so all peoples.
When you were on the Supreme Court, after he'd appointed you to the Supreme Court, when I was talking to Wally Carson, Wally, you know, he made some very conscious decisions that he couldn't pal around with Vic because they, you had different constitutional roles now. Did you find that as well?
I didn't pal around with him, but that wasn't the reason.
Yeah.
I would have palled around with him. I mean, I would have been happy to see him, but he's he's too busy. And we were commuting, so it didn't offer that opportunity, but I'd, I would see him, and we'd go have coffee, or I'd go in and shoot the breeze with him, but I never was concerned about that. I haven't been concerned about that sort of thing with a lot of people over the years. I've been a judge for 52 years, and I had don't like to live in isolation.
Yeah, exactly. Were you ever involved in talking to Vic about what the court might need in terms of if another opening came up, we need someone with trial experience or, you know, any of those kinds of things?
No. Mainly because I was rooting for Dick and Mick, and they were the I never was asked.
Right. Okay. Okay. It's just a fascinating. I mean, there's an executive appointments person in Vic's office.
Yeah.
No. And then there's the court is always its own kind of thing. There's,
yeah.
You know, Jack Faust, Vic would call Jack Faust. Jack would never call Vic, but Vic would call Jack, and
right.
And he'd ask other people too. Yeah. And so it's a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, Jack called the shots for Jake and Ed. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating.
Jack also was my main with Backwood are the ones who got me this job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jack, amazing guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got
wonderful friend.
Yeah, he's a good guy. So, on the court, were you there when you made the decision on the safe raid?
On what?
The safe raid. 1982, the legislature had balanced a budget that was crumbling by going and getting $83 million from the safe fund.
Yeah,
and then you know everybody. It was immediately challenged and eventually decided no, you can't do that. So Ted Kulongoski, who was in the legislature passing this, is eventually the attorney general,
uh-huh.
writing a $260 million check to repay the $83 million.
I didn't get involved in
you
that.
You didn't
one.
Get okay.
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did Wally?
Yeah, Wally did because Wally. Was just appointed as that was happening and couldn't talk to Vic because
yeah.
you know, of the new you know, relationship. And so it was a real turning point.
See, I just came on right after that.
Yeah.
I sat on some innocuous cases in December of 82 and started my regular session in 83.
In 83, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Talk to me about Vic as being an ex-governor. He's got an amazing amount of managerial expertise, and I don't find any of the governors really tapping into that until Ted Kulongoski.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, you'd think if there's a recession coming up, you'd talk to the guy who got us through the worst recession.
Yeah.
But talk to me about Vic as an ex-governor. What role did he play? What did you see?
I know that there are other people that are better qualified to answer that
mm-hmm.
because I was just another citizen.
Yeah, that's fine.
I just knew that his role in the international scene was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
made endless efforts to do that. His seems like he was everything and everywhere,
mm-hmm.
But nothing. There's so many other people that are more intimately involved
yeah.
in what he did do.
Yeah.
And as you know, he was famous for not taking credit for what he did.
He sure was. Denny Miles gets so ticked off at him.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you see in terms of his relationship with the legislature? And the reason I ask is, so you serve with him, he's in the minority.
Yeah.
He switches to the Senate right when the Republicans get the House, and so he's in the minority.
Yeah.
And then he becomes the governor, and he has a Democratic legislature the whole time.
Yeah.
And so there's a question for me. He was bipartisan, but he had no choice. Couldn't get anything done unless he
yeah.
was bipartisan.
Right.
So what did you see with that dynamic?
Well, wouldn't it be nice if we had him back under today's environment
mm-hmm.
where they can't get anything done, it seems.
Exactly.
Especially on the national scene.
Yeah.
But
I interviewed him four times before he died, and he was frustrated.
He was he was a strong conservative, but he mm-hmm. wasn't a strong Republican. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are just as many good minds on the Democratic side as there were on the Republican side.
Okay.
And I think Vic went to where the truth was and where mm-hmm. the strong points were.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could take somebody like Bud Lent.
Mm-hmm.
Bud Lent, a ribald guy, a mm-hmm. good personal friend, but he's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And Bud could come down to court, for instance, and study everything, anything with doing with math or science. He was mm-hmm. way above everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Vic respected him.
Mm-hmm.
And Bud and John Mosser worked like that on
yeah.
complicated ways and means stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And just an example, there are dozens of very strong Democrats in our Oregon history and in mm-hmm. our legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Vic did not run by party label,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, or he wouldn't have got anything done.
Mm-hmm.
He also was very honest, and I don't think he made a vote for a political reason in his entire life.
Mm-hmm. That frustrated the Rajneeshis to no end. They just didn't believe it.
Well, the Rajneeshis,
Jerry said he doesn't make deals.
Yeah.
And they just didn't believe him. And finally it became clear. And
we had a brush with the Rajneeshis in the Supreme Court. They came and they had lawyers arguing their cases for him. And
mm-hmm.
then they made a sub rosa invitation to all the law clerks to come over to the
mm-hmm.
compound.
Yeah.
And some went.
Huh?
And the Chief Justice just raised hell.
Yeah.
How stupid can you get? God, then you wonder about these young intellects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just didn't have the experience to know that mm-hmm. you say no.
Mm-hmm.
But Vic, of course, yes. a much higher level, said no.
Yeah, yeah. Vic is, it's publicly known he didn't have anything to do with them publicly and all those kinds
right.
of things. But I'm beginning to dig things that, because he did an amazing amount behind the scenes that just has never been told, ever.
Yeah. And well, so about when he might have been poisoned.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course, they hit Judge Jellick, who's on our court here,
yeah.
knows all about the Rajneeshis. He dealt with them and
yeah.
was a target. And, of course, they tried to take out a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I wouldn't be surprised that they didn't get to him at that.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all. And the reason is the evidence from what we know with the salmonella and stuff.
Yeah.
They were only able to match 20% of the illnesses to the actual salmonella strain.
Right.
And so that it makes perfect sense that
sure.
would happen to Vic. When I talked to Lon Holbrook, his state police guy, I have other people who have said they treated it like an assassination attempt, because you have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope to get him to go on the record and say, yes, they did as well.
Yeah.
And then the fun thing is Barbara Roberts remembers just being elected Secretary of State and getting a call from Jerry Thompson saying, we've just taken the governor to the hospital. He's fine. But, and she, you
yeah.
never think of Secretary of State, oh, I'm the successor. And so when I told her about Vic, she's, you know, putting those together.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, look at that.
Yeah.
When I interviewed Barbara, it was right when Kate Brown was becoming governor. And Barbara was using her remembrance of that call from Jerry, telling people, when you're the Secretary of State, if the governor calls, you have to come.
Right.
It's your job.
Right.
There's no governor if he resigns. So, fun, fascinating things. So, from your place here, federal judge, state judge, served in the legislature for about a year. Were you in there for a year? Geez, not even a year.
Excuse me?
You were in the legislature for less than a year.
Yeah.
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 You just kind of did the session and that was it.
6 months.
Yeah, six months. Give me some perspective on Vicatia compared to other governors.
In respect to what?
Other governors.
Well, of course, McCall was a reporter when I became a judge.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we have his video, so McCall was not anywhere near the governorship in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
He was still a reporter.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when he went on the bench, of course, he was very flamboyant, wonderful, colorful speaker.
Mm-hmm.
We've teased him about some of his martini appointments, like Shirley
uh-huh.
Field and
uh-huh. yeah.
et cetera. Anyway, just the opposite
mm-hmm.
of Vic.
Mm-hmm.
He is very much just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
He loved the publicity. He,
mm-hmm.
he loved. I thought he's a wonderful governor too.
Mm-hmm.
The next governor, Straub, was very quiet,
mm-hmm.
plain guy.
Mm-hmm.
Vic beat him handily,
mm-hmm.
right? And the second time around,
mm-hmm.
And Vic had to beat Tom McCall on a comeback too.
Yeah.
So, of course, very happy with Kulongowski because he appointed my son as a judge.
There you go.
And
very nice.
We love that. It's been a wonderful, fabulous thing. And I always like Ted. Comes out of just the worst possible background.
Oh,
and, and he's a very warm, feeling, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And never did have anything to do with Kitzhaber.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Kitzhaber once on a judicial appointment and got nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But
anything with Goldschmidt?
I'm sorry?
Anything with Goldschmidt?
Yeah. Goldschmidt, of course, was a very bright guy and moving or shover politician to the core.
Yeah.
But he, when I was having trouble getting my federal thing through, after I'd been appointed by Bush, he wanted Susan Graver to take my place on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were stuck.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted Susan to come on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted Susan to come on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And but I wasn't getting the final word. Fighting Grassley and some other people, obstructionists. And anyway, so we made a deal. Goldschmidt said, I will always appoint Susan to the Supreme Court as soon as you're off. And so he sent over a bottle of wine saying, hang in there. And then Susan made a deal that I would definitely, if I got reelected, I would definitely, would resign when I went on the bench. And
mm-hmm.
we wrote that out.
Yeah.
And then that's what happened.
Finally
got there. Susan came on. She did it all her own research, all of her own word processing.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous job, much stronger than I was. Anyway, she then went on the Ninth Circuit,
mm-hmm.
where she came that close to get on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about that one?
I just heard a little bit about it, but
Well, I went back to, as a judge, mm-hmm. I went back and met with President Clinton. His mm-hmm. photographs in my, did you
yeah,
see that
yeah,
in there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Shaking his hand, I said, well, we're all, the opening was then, for the Supreme Court, was open and mm-hmm. ripe. And Susan had an incredible amount of backing mm-hmm. from our senators and so forth. And so I said to the Senate, I said, to the governor, to the president, mm-hmm. I said, we're out from Oregon, and we are all rooting for Susan Graber. And he said, let me tell you, he pushed everybody else aside, including Jack Weinstein, Weinstein and Evident.
Yeah.
He said, let me tell you about Susan Graber. We're in tax class. And she got sick, and she didn't attend a single class. She barred my notes and beat me on the final. When Susan Graber walks in the room, the average IQ goes up 50%. Yes, I know Susan Graber, and she went back and slept in the Lincoln Room, and we thought she had it. And then just at the end, Ginsburg's husband
yeah.
had a tremendous amount of clout and just pushed her aside,
yeah.
barely. What a great contribution she would have made.
Yeah, yeah. Huh, amazing. Amazing. Yeah, it's been interesting watching the federal court. When Reagan was in office, and it's fascinating, Vic, in a lot of things, was no big fan of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And very publicly so. When the recession was hitting, and Reagan was cutting back on what the states were getting,
yeah.
Vic was on the front page saying, I don't know if we can support him for re-election.
Yeah.
So, some amazing things. But when Reagan was in office, he appointed Stanford law graduates. And then we get all these guys.
Well, he also appointed Reagan's campaign manager.
Yeah.
Dio Scanlon.
Yeah, yeah. But then since then, everybody's come from Harvard and Yale.
Yeah.
And so they're appointing all these people from Harvard and Yale. It's like, you know.
Yale. Yale's outdone Harvard.
Yeah, exactly.
Lately. Yeah, we just saw, just watched last Friday with Justice Kennedy.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yes.
Great guy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's interesting with the...
He's Stanford and Harvard, isn't he?
I think he's Stanford and Harvard.
Yeah.
He's one of the only kind of West Coast of anything.
Yeah. I'll show you some people you don't know.
Uh-huh.
They haven't seen. We had a group of trial lawyers and trial judges.
Uh-huh.
And they're, you know about Schwabe Williamson?
Uh-huh.
There's Schwabe. There's Williamson.
Well, there you are.
You talk about Cosgrave Kester. There's Cosgrave.
Uh-huh.
There's Kester.
Yeah.
Talk about Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justices. There's John O'Denicky. There's Ed Peterson.
Uh-huh.
There's Bill Crow. Hilliard with the Lane Powell uh-huh. firm.
Mm-hmm.
Burl Green and Griswold, there's Green and Griswold. There's my partner, Cliff Olson,
mm-hmm.
and Tom,
mm-hmm.
of the Supreme Court. Quite a group, huh?
Yeah, it's a power lunch
right
there.
We used to kick the hell out of each other. And we'd always have St. Patrick's Day, we'd celebrate with Walter at the University Club.
Uh-huh.
There's Scalia.
Uh-huh.
There's Ed Peterson.
Yeah.
I mean, Ed Levy.
Right.
And Owens, now 91, Derman. And, but Ed Levy and Ted Goodwin, I'm having them over this week to talk about their books.
Uh-huh.
Bob Weiss is about their war experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Beatty about his war experiences.
Yeah.
We got Ted Goodwin and his whole life. But Goodwin and Levy, they can't be trusted. You see, Goodwin went on the bench early, and then in the state
mm-hmm.
court, then he went on the Oregon Supreme Court, then he went on the district court,
mm-hmm.
then he went on the circuit court, and he was chief judge of the Ninth Circuit. Levy went on the court at age 26, and he was a state district judge, state circuit judge, pro tem, Supreme Court Justice, U.S. Magistrate, U.S. District Judge, Ninth Circuit judge, FISA judge. Those guys can't hold a job.
Exactly. So people say about Ted Kulongoski, too.
That's my joke.
That's good. Yeah, exactly.
We about covered it?
Yeah. Any last things you want to add?
No, I just think that I can't say enough positive things about Vic. He was just good at everything he did,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
no negatives.
Yeah.
I had a philosophy professor tell me that, you know, students, that your life after death, we can have all sorts of religious beliefs,
mm-hmm.
but in reality, it'll be measured by the good that you did while you were here.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Vic Atieh will have a future in Oregon century.
Yeah, absolutely. One last question. I'm asking this of everybody because I'm just trying to chase it down. Do you know when Victor started having a close relationship with the tribes?
With his what?
With the tribes.
Oh, when?
Did you see any evidence of that when you were in the legislature with him?
No, none. Came later.
73, he's the one who passes, there's a legislative tribal committee.
Yeah.
And so he's behind that. So it's sometime before then, but
Is that important?
Yeah. Well, it becomes important because the tribes play a big, big role in his life.
I have no idea. Well, anyway, he was a remarkable guy, and I sure appreciate all your work on it.
Well, it's
putting
fun.
Together a book is, this is, I don't know if you know Steve Wasby or not. Huh?
No.
Well, he's written this book, The History of Ted Goodwin,
mm-hmm.
and boy, it's incredible. There are things in there nobody ever knew.
Yeah,
but
I've come across several of those.
I don't have anything. Oh, the only other thing is we're Vic's brothers.
Yeah,
the twins, and Vic always felt sheepish about not being in the service,
mm-hmm.
And his boys, the brothers, were.
Yeah.
And we all knew. See, we knew the Atiehs over in Washington County.
Yeah.
Everybody went to the same parties, and
yeah.
And they were, the Atiehs were real close friends of Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Jim Campbell.
Yeah.
Jim and Donna.
And so we'd see him with Campbell, Galt,
mm-hmm.
Tom Galt, another one.
Yeah.
We'd have wonderful parties, and socialize with the Atiehs, the twins more than with Vic, but mm-hmm. also Vic. And they had an incredible story that having been captured in the Battle of the Bulge, and you know about the Battle of the Bulge and the ASTP, do you?
Yeah. In fact, I've just written about the brothers and their experience.
Okay.
It's pretty
well, ASTP, the Army Specialized Training Program,
mm-hmm.
and in it were John Mosser, John and Charlie Crookham, and of course Jerry Frank, and then Jim Burns, mm-hmm. and they took all these brilliant students out of Ivy League schools and stuck them in the front lines, and the quartermaster corps sold off the winter uniforms. You knew
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
they had to wrap their feet in blankets and froze. And when the twins called at home, then I was just down at the penitentiary Friday with 11 new externs.
Uh-huh.
I was going to look up one of the twins' sons.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that?
No.
He's there. Big drug dealer.
Oh, yeah. So that would be Richard's.
I don't know which one.
Yeah, it's got to be Richard because I know
one of them's gone. The other one looked awful feeble.
Yeah,
I saw.
Yeah, Ed, and I've talked to Ed officially on tape two times.
Yeah, I hope we're through with this.
I call him.
Okay.
In fact, I have things to call him about this week as well. Yeah, they and writing about their World War II exploits.
Yeah. I don't want that on for what I said about Vic and the service.
No.
Okay.
No. Ed only told his family what had happened 50 years later.
Uh-huh.
And then Richard, it took, and he kept a wartime diary.
Uh-huh.
It took then 64 years, 2008 was when he first typed that up. But Victor is interviewed by the Oregon Historical Society in 1992.
Uh-huh.
So it's not 50 years yet. And he knows a lot of the details.
Yeah.
So that just is, the brothers are really close.
Yeah, well, very.
The three of them talked about this.
Very close,
So that's it's a real important telling thing. Even though there was rivalries and, you know, all those things.
Was Vic ever with the Washington, with the Lions Club?
I don't know if he was or not.
I think the Twins were.
Yeah, the Twins did a lot of that kind of stuff. Victor seemed to be more downtown things.
I was just thinking about the things that Bob Fisher got me into, the Lions Roar.
Yeah, exactly. When I go give talks at the Lions Club, it's always, there they are.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming by. I hope it's